T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Let's bring on our good friend Stefano Fusaro, ESPN reporter, just finished 45 days of bubble duty. This man is the king of the swan boats, just had 45 days in the MLS bubble. Stefano, I know they kept you busy in there, obviously, because you were doing a ton there for ESPN. I saw you all over TV for that entire 45 days. Did the time fly by, or did it kind of go slow because you were, you know, in one place, unable to do too much? How was that experience?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely went by kind of slow, just because, I think it was because, we were working, living, doing everything in the same place, right? So, you know, we'd finish a work day. Whether that was at 1 a.m. some nights, whether that was at 6 p.m. some nights, 7 p.m., and all we did was take an elevator up to our hotel room for the most part. So it was definitely it felt a lot longer than it was 6 weeks. It was kind of surreal walking into my house a few hours ago and seeing my daughter, and it was just it definitely is an experience I'm never going to forget. Just put it that way.
And the players, man. Like, throughout, you know, the 10th day, you probably didn't see it, Stefano, but the 20th day, the 30th day, did you see the players getting impatient, maybe walking around or trying to get people in? Did you see the players kind of getting fed up with the bubble, if I can put it that way?
Channing, it was like when we first got there, there was so much uncertainty, and there were the issues with FC Dallas and Nashville, that they had a bunch of positive tests that originated outside of the bubble, and they brought him in. And I think that first week, it was more like, what the hell is going on? I mean, I was getting texts from players like, hey, what's going to happen? Are they going to cancel this thing? Like, they were even kind of in the dark and just not really leaving their rooms a lot. So I think that once that initial week passed and you started seeing that there was, no more positive tests, a lot of negatives, you started seeing guys kind of come out of their cell a little bit, start using some of the games on the property, using the pool, and kind of just settling into that environment a little bit. So it wasn't so much that they were fed up. I think they were happy to just, kind of know that they were safe and they're able to do something, do a little bit more than just go to training and go to their rooms and that's about it. You know what I mean? So I don't think there was so much, hesitation of wanting to get out of there. More just like, okay, we're here, just accepting the fact that this is what was going to happen. Now, when teams did lose, you also did kind of hear, well, yeah, it sucks we lost, but at least we're going home. So it also was that kind of like, we want to win, but we also want to go home at the same time.
So for you, what was most effective in passing the time when you weren't working? I mean, we spoke to you, I think, right, like a day or two after you got into the bubble. I know you had either your PlayStation or your Xbox with you. There were some activities you could do. I know you weren't going to the theme parks or anything, but there was some stuff you're able to do around the resort. What were the most entertaining things for you during your downtime?
I mean, like, it wasn't a ton, but the pool bar, that was kind of really where you saw everyone hang out. Because it was really the only thing where you could just kind of go and relax and sit by the pool and obviously keeping social distance and everything. But that's probably what was used the most. We played a little bit of beach volleyball one of the days. That was fun. I played with some of the players from Portland who ended up winning. So I'm going to take a little bit of credit for that because they ended up winning the tournament. It was definitely not a ton to do. Thankfully, I brought my PlayStation because that helped pass a lot of time and some of those late nights, being able to play with some friends from home. From Miami, actually. So it was fun, man. It was a good time as far as trying to make as best as you make a situation that's tough as best as you possibly can. But there were a lot of nights where it's like, all right, now what? Now what do I do? You know what I mean? Like, all right, we went to the pool. We did this. We did that. There's not a whole lot. Netflix, a lot of Netflix. And that's kind of what we did during downtime. There wasn't a whole lot to do. but you made the best of it.
We're joined by Stefano Fusaro from ESPN. Did a great job reporting inside the MLS bubble for the past 45 days. Now, of course, Solana, Crowder, and I, we are all ride or die with Inter Miami. We'll get to them a little bit later, but we're all very relieved that Orlando City did not win this tournament. They got very close. They got to the final. They were beaten by Portland last night. What did you make of the game last night, Stefano, and just Portland's run through the finals? I know they were one of the favorites, but they certainly backed it up.
Yeah, I think it was a cagey match last night. You saw just, you know, nobody really wanted to make a mistake. And you get that sometimes in finals when the trophy's on the line, when there's just one game. You get kind of a cagey match, you know. Not a lot of guys going forward, not a lot of risks being taken. But look, man, I picked Portland to win before this final, just a day or two before the final. And the simple reason is because they've been here before. They've played together in big-time matches. Orlando had won 11 matches out of their previous 61 before they arrived in this tournament. So, I mean, it's just so 2020 that they even got to the final. You know what I mean? Nobody expected that, and they're playing very well. But Portland's experience in those big-time games, their players, Diego Valeri, who had both assists last night, he was kind of the leader in that group, and being able to say that, hey, look, I've lifted an MLS Cup trophy before. I've lifted other U.S. Open Cup trophies as well. And that experience really kind of took them throughout the tournament of not panicking in moments where things didn't go well. And that's exactly what you saw last night, Portland, just a veteran, a savvy performance, especially late, to hold that lead at 2-1 and seal the win.
And, Stefano, I got to ask you, and I've asked other people from the NBA, the MLB, the NHL, the WNBA, anybody that's moving forward with this adjusted 2020 season, are we watching good soccer? Are you seeing the quality of soccer that you would have seen if COVID-19 never existed? Are we seeing good soccer?
I think that the first week, first games for these teams, maybe the first two games for these teams in this tournament, there was a little bit of lack of quality. I think you saw the rustiness. But you also saw it in the best European leagues in the world. I mean, the English Premier League got off to a slow start as well. Not a lot of goals early, a lot of rust, a lot of guys making mistakes that they usually wouldn't make. So you did see that. But by the end, and look, by all and large, it was an entertaining tournament. I mean, you got what MLS is. I read something from a colleague that wrote recently. He said, look, you don't love MLS for amazing soccer. You love MLS because it's fun, because it's wacky, because it's crazy, because the unexpected happens, sometimes by accident. And I think that you got that at the end of the day in this tournament. You got some of that wackiness, that unexpectedness, those late goals but because of mistakes. But it was entertaining, and I think that that's what you want with MLS, is to have those kind of wacky, entertaining games, because that's some of the best soccer we see in this league are games like that, where you just expect the unexpected. And I did feel like we saw that once the tournament got going a little bit.
Yeah, I know a lot of South Floridians, disappointed with Inter Miami's run in the group stage. They're still yet to pick up a win in franchise history, and I know people are really anticipating that. I mean, it turns out their group, I think, was a lot tougher than people thought, with, you know, Orlando getting all the way to the finals, you know, Philadelphia making a deep run, New York City making a pretty deep run as well, so probably a little bit tougher than we thought. You know, they've signed Blaise Matuidi. I think that was just official today, mm-hmm. Who's really going to help the midfield. I mean, how do you feel about the way Inter Miami performed, and are you optimistic about their future?
You know, it is kind of it's tough, right? I mean, look, you guys both know, all you guys know, it's, Miami's my hometown, and I'm always going to root for their teams, and I'm always going to root for Inter. But I see their launch probably couldn't have gone any worse. And I think that in hindsight, if you get the owners in an honest moment, I think in hindsight they'll tell you they wish they would have waited to start this franchise until 2021. And that's even before the pandemic and before everything happened. I don't think that they were fully prepared to launch the team, and you saw it. This team is—it's not so much even the fact that they're not winning; it's the fact that they're not looking very well while playing. Even though the score lines will look good, you look at that midfield. That signing, I think, is huge for them. I think they needed some kind of creativity, some kind of veteran leader in that midfield to create and help. You know, everyone wants the striker. Everyone wants them to sign the forward, the number nine for the team. Well, the truth is that if you don't have any creativeness or anybody in the midfield that can set up your striker and give them service to be able to score, you're in deep doo-doo when it comes to MLS, and you have to have that. You have to have it. And this team I think that, you know, they have to still build this roster. There's still a long ways to go. I think that the coach has the respect of all the players, and they truly believe in him. They just need a little bit more quality. And I think that they're starting to do it now. You have Matuidi, but there's still some signings that need to happen for this team to truly take that next step and be one of the top teams in MLS.
Yeah, and I think you touched on a couple things there that piqued my interest. I have seen a lot of, disappointment on social media, people hoping that, prior to the Matuidi signing coming out, people hoping that it would have been a big name number nine. Like, I know that a couple weeks ago, there were heavy links to Edinson Cavani. I mean, even staying in the midfield, there were links to David Silva, who's, obviously a huge international name. Neither of those materialized. I think the Matuidi signing is a good one. I know a lot of people were looking for something flashier, like a proven goal scorer. I still hope they get a goal scorer, but, do you think that, signing Matuidi and helping shore up the midfield was the right move right now, or should they have held out for a number nine?
No, yeah, I really do think it was the right move. If they didn't have a guy like an Edinson Cavani or a Radamel Falcao locked in to sign with this team, the next best thing would have been to get a midfielder, a creative guy in the midfield to help set up an offense. Because right now, that midfield is just, it's non-existent. I mean, if you watch it, I hate to say it, but it's non-existent. You don't see any type of creativity. You don't see them being able to control games. Teams control games through their midfield. If you can control a game through your midfield, you have a really good chance to win. And they have not been able to do that in any of the games that they've played pre-pandemic or post-pandemic. So, you know what I mean? I really do think that it was the right signing. Now, they do still need a striker. I mean, that's a glaring, obvious need. But if you couldn't get one of your main guys, which a guy like Edinson Cavani would have been huge, and not to say that it still can't happen, but it's not looking real good right now. You need that midfield. You need a midfielder to help set everything up. If you don't have a solid midfield, you're going to have issues. And I think that was the right signing.
And Stefano, I'll let you know, I don't know much about soccer. Y'all talking about midfield setups and all, and I don't know what the hell y'all are speaking of. But I wanted to ask you this, like with Matuidi, is that the man's name, Matuidi?
You got it, Matuidi.
Matuidi. does this is my question though, Stefano. Does David Beckham help? Because we're trying to build an organization. As I see, you said they should have put it back to 2021. Like, this is a tough year to start. They want to build the roster. Like, does the name David Beckham, does that help the franchise move forward faster? Because you're saying it takes time. You need to get better players. Like, everything you're talking about, does David Beckham help that work faster? Is that accelerated by David Beckham being attached to this organization?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, that's what I think everybody thought, right? That's what I believed. I thought that, having David Beckham as an owner is going to give the team that flash, that just kind of that – I get to hate to say this, but that Miami feel where going to be kind of a show.
But I do feel that
I think they have a lot of the odds are just stacked against them because they started in 2020 because of the things that we have. Look, a lot of the reasons why maybe Edinson Cavani or David Silva decided not to come to Miami, a lot of it might have to do with the fact that they don't really feel like they want to come to the United States right now with everything that's going on. It's a very real possibility. And when you're talking about David Beckham, yeah, of course he's going to recruit. I mean, he played with Matuidi at the end of his career in Paris. So, like, there is definitely things that there's definitely, like, a little bit of that star power that's going to help bring players in. But it's just the timing is just so off. And you really can't blame the ownership group for that. But at the same time, it's really having an impact, I think, right now. As far as them trying to build the team that they had envisioned. And unfortunately, that they also sold that vision to the fans, and now they're not really able to put that on the field just yet. So they do have a lot of odds stacked against them, unfortunately.
Last thing here for Stefano Fusaro. I enjoyed the MLS is Back tournament. I thought it was pretty well received from people I speak to who watch it, especially people who don't normally watch that league and were giving it a shot. I think they enjoyed it. I think they benefited from the fact that when the tournament started, there wasn't a whole lot else going on. So you probably had extra eyes on the set. I mean, your overall kind of progress report on where MLS is right now. I mean, obviously they're not overtaking any of the top five European leagues yet or anytime soon, but are they closing that gap a little bit when it comes to quality?
Yeah, I mean, look, I would compare the MLS, and I've said this a few times, to probably the championship in England, the second division in England. I think that that's a fair comparison right now. You see a kind of the same type of wacky games over there in that division of soccer. But look, I think that the tournament was a very big, positive. The fact, I applaud MLS. It was a Herculean effort to put this tournament on and to do it. And especially that first week, I can't say it enough how tough that first week was when we had the positive test, when everybody was really concerned, everybody was really worried. Soccer wasn't really on anybody's mind. And for MLS to stick to their guns and say, look, we trust our protocols. We trust what we're doing here. We're going to continue to move forward. We feel like we have everything contained. And they did. And after that first week, we went 5 weeks without a positive test inside of the MLS bubble. And I think that that alone is a huge accomplishment. And as far as the soccer is concerned, look, they had a lot of eyes. You know, the numbers as far as the ratings go, you know, with MLS, it's always a little bit tough as far as the ratings go. But still, on a lot of days on ESPN, it was still the highest rated program on that specific day. Those MLS games. So I think that it's still something that you're seeing grow. It's going to continue to grow. And I think that it was only positive for MLS, especially that, like you said, at the beginning of the tournament, when there was nothing else going on, you had a lot more eyes on the league. And I think that they did make some fans. And I think that they feel comfortable saying, like, look, we made some fans. We made some casual fans. We brought them along. We maybe, you know, in certain markets got guys interested in their teams. And they're going to try to build the momentum. And now, as we know, tonight, the continuation of the regular season happens tonight. It begins tonight with Nashville and FC Dallas, the two teams that were withdrawn from the tournament because of the coronavirus. They are starting their new regular season today in Dallas, unfortunately, with about 5,000 fans. So that's going to be a little bit interesting, but that's maybe a conversation for another day.
I didn't even realize they were going to have fans there. Well, that's another thing I'm curious about for tonight. He's Stefano Fusaro. Excellent work reporting from that bubble.
Awesome.
You can follow him on Twitter at Fusaro ESPN. Stefano, and enjoy the bubble-free life now. Back into the world. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.